Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this episode, we're going to have on Brian Butcher from Kansas. It's a pretty exciting story, pretty unique story. Brian recently tagged a monster buck in Kansas, a non-typical, that is likely to be declared very soon the second largest non-typical whitetail ever taken by a hunter in America. So pretty awesome story. What I like most about Brian is that he was very frank, very honest. He hadn't been chasing this deer a long time. He didn't have tons of trail camera photos. He just happened to climb in the right tree stand at the right time and get lucky. And he talks about that. And what we can all learn from this tale is oftentimes the biggest bucks, the world records, a lot of them are just taken by average Joes who get lucky. And that is definitely the case here. But it is an awesome story and an awesome perspective that he has. Before we get him on the show, I'd like to thank my sponsors. My title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, makers of the Ghillie Blind, soft-sided blind, and of course, their fiberglass blinds. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, if you're going to be filming a turkey hunt this year, check out their Rex Arm. It's perfect for filming turkey hunts. Windscent, makers of Vapor Deer Scent Technology. Morel Targets, makers of the High Roller Target. Huntworth Gear, if you're on a budget and you want some awesome hunting clothes, check out huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane, Lucky Buck Mineral. Grim Reaper Broadheads, my favorite broadhead. Schaefer Performance Archery, they make the XV Arrow Rest that is designed to handle speeds exceeding 400 feet per second. Arrows that go that fast, a lot of times there's trouble with arrow rests. The arrows are bumping into the rest, while the XV Arrow Rest solves that problem. Illinois Connection Outfitters in Pike County, Illinois. The Outdoorsman's, makers of high-end backpacks and tripods for glassing big game. And last but not least, Wilderness Athlete. If you want to shed a few pounds, you're tired of drinking sugary drinks, check out wildernessathlete.com. They make a variety of nutritional products. My favorite, the Hydrate and Recover drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Brian on the phone. Welcome to the Drop 10 Report. How are you today?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on, and congratulations on, you know, just a freak of a buck that you don't see every day. That's what caught my eye and why I really wanted to interview you. Your story sounded intriguing to me. And so before we get too far in the weeds, am I correct in saying if all goes according to plan, this buck has been measured, and after all is said and done, he could be the fourth largest non-typical whitetail ever taken?
That is correct. And it'll be Kansas state record and second largest hunter harvested.
Okay. Wow. Second largest. So is it going to be only second to Brewster's buck then?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
That's amazing. And what's amazing too is in such a close period of time, you know, he shoots his buck and then you turn right around, you know, the next year and kill this buck, you know. And a lot of these records stand for decades. And then it seems like in the last few years, a lot of them have been falling.
Yeah, it definitely seems over the last 5 years, there's been a lot of big deer taken. And I mean, you used to never hear of a deer, you know, scoring over 300 inches. And you know, all of a sudden in the last 5 years, there's certainly a handful of them.
What's the gross score on this buck? It's like 340 something?
Yeah, 343 and 4/8.
And then the net will be?
321 and 3/8.
And isn't that just, that's crazy. You know, I've read it and you've talked to me about it, but just to let it sink in, it really is just, they're a freak of nature for sure.
Yeah, it's certainly mind-boggling for me in the sense that, you know, we measured it here at work. A guy that I work with is pretty knowledgeable, and, you know, we measured it three times, and you just don't even want to say it out loud until you hear something like that confirmed, because it just doesn't make sense.
So let's tell the story. Tell a little bit about yourself. I don't know a whole lot about you. Obviously, as you mentioned, you were a little reluctant to be on the podcast because of some of the famous people we have on, and you don't feel like you're in that caliber, but I think it's awesome that you killed the buck. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, are you just hardcore or, just luck or a little bit of both?
I would say leaning more on the ends of luck. I got into deer hunting, thankful to my boss, actually, about 13 years ago. And it was straight into archery. And, as soon as I got that bow, I mean, we were shooting just hundreds of arrows a week and, really putting in the practice and was able to get a turkey with my bow the first spring and, have hunted this same property for those 13 years. And, we always try to improve it, but, we have no grand, food plots in there, things like that. But, each year we just try to improve upon it. But, then all of a sudden life happens. You're married, you've got kids, and, the opportunities to get out into the woods starts dwindling. And, work, has certainly affected that too. But, I would say I'm not hardcore, but, we go out there and, we're very passionate about it. And there's two buddies of mine that go out there and, we work together on it throughout the year.
Now, whose property is it and how large is it?
Let's just say it's in central Kansas and it's a good piece of property and, it's
sure,
fairly
I get
large.
It. Yep.
I'm okay. Grateful and lucky, that I get to hunt it and, get to do it with my friends too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, is it largely, and I'm not trying to figure it out, obviously, trying to kind of set the table. Do you guys have food plots or is it mainly farm ground and you have to let the farmer do his thing or, what's the story there?
It's a perfectly diverse property in the sense that, it's got a mix of ag. It's kind of like creek bottom ground. It's mostly pasture. But the greatest parts about it are we've got several patches. You could call it CRP, but that are just untouched. And then we also have water going through the property. So it's fantastic. And, you can kind of let it raise the deer on its own, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Yeah. And kind of nice for you guys, because when you are raising a family and have kids, the struggle I always have is, man, when do you find the time to hang stands and put food plots in and till the ground and this, that, and the other, so having a piece of property like that's a true gem.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that, I mean, we've got a tree stand that we meant to hang up, a year and a half ago, and it's still on the ground out there, but, eventually we'll get to it. But, that's kind of where this story starts is, it was, early season, always have that anticipation, leading up to the season and big plans in our heads. But we made a trip out there October 2nd. And, the plan for that trip was to hang up some more trail cameras. We wanted to move one stand over. Coincidentally, it's a stand that I hunted out of and harvested that deer. But we got it moved over, and while we were out there, a buddy of mine ended up losing a little plastic container with some of his calls in it. So that evening, he told me, and he was really anxious to get back out there, find his calls. And it was about a week and a half later, and I was able to take off on a Friday and, coincidentally made sure it was the best day to get out there and hunt. And we had a cold front moving in, and anyway. We got out there that Friday afternoon. We found his calls pretty quick and then went back to where we had parked the trucks, shot some practice arrows. Then we took the four-wheeler over, trimmed out shooting lanes for that stand that we had moved. And I mean, that's the part that blows a lot of people's mind is the fact that we were in there trimming shooting lanes out of this, stand the night that I shot the deer.
Now, what day was this?
The day of the hunt was October 11th.
Okay, so pretty early season.
Yeah. I mean, we usually don't put a whole lot of weight into October, especially not early October. But we always love to get out, and when my buddy came out there, he had an obligation that night to get back to. And so he trimmed those shooting lanes. He left. And, you know, I got back into that stand, you know, a little before 4 o'clock and was able to sit the rest of the evening. But, you know, it wasn't, I don't know, 15 to 20 minutes after getting set up into that stand that had a small buck come in. And the wind was going to be shifting a little bit that evening and dying down. But anyway, that deer, to me, acted a little bit spooked. And then you start second guessing, you know, is this a waste of time? You know, we trimmed out these shooting lanes.
Probably warm too, right? Or no?
No, it was the first cold snap of the year. And,
okay.
You know, cold for Kansas in October, we're talking like 40 degrees, you know, so it's perspective. Mm-hmm. But it was cooling down. The wind was dying down and that deer ran off. And then I had another, what I would call a decent 8-pointer. He was pretty wide, but not very tall. I actually filmed him with my cell phone for a solid 45 minutes, just on and off. And he was right underneath my stand. He was sitting there, you know, eating the leaves off the limbs that we had trimmed out and just calm as can be, you know, worked downwind to me, just created a lot of confidence from there on. And it was about 5 minutes later and he strolled off. And next thing I know, I'm looking back, I guess it would be to my east, and it's kind of a CRP field that is bordered with a draw and a little bit of water in that draw. And, you know, out steps that buck and there was a small buck with him. And, you know, you look at pictures of that deer and just imagine that being 50 yards away and trying to figure out what it is, you know, is it coming through some burly grass and trees, things like that. But as soon as, you know, that deer got within about 40 yards, I would say that, you know, I was able to confirm that, you know, those were antlers. It wasn't grass. It wasn't twigs.
So is that what you thought first? I mean, when you came out, did you think, you know, he had barbed wire wrapped around his head or some crazy thing?
I didn't know if it was twine, if it was, you know, sticks. I mean, my first instinct was it was sticks. You know, it just seemed to make sense. A deer could have been, you know, rubbing on some shrubs and got it caught in there.
Yeah. How far away was he when you first saw him?
I would say about 50 to 60 yards.
Okay. Yeah. And so he steps out and has all this gnarly, crazy stuff on his head. And you're like, man, yeah, what's that?
Yeah. Confusion. But then, you know, it was kind of as soon as you know, realize that that's antlers, I just stopped looking at the rack. I mean, I never once looked at it again until I walked up on that deer. And, you know, I'd be the first one to tell you, you know, I was lucky, but that deer moved in and I knew that I had to, you know, make it happen and make it happen quick in the sense that he had another buck with him. I just, you know, when they're working in pairs, it's just twice as many senses, I guess, working against you.
Sure.
But that deer kept moving to the west and he was going to come straight in front of me. But before he did, he actually turned and then started going north. Well, that put him, you know, in a sense parallel. And I shoot to my left as a right-handed bow hunter best. And, you know, he just came in, worked north about 5 to 10 yards. And he was only about 25 yards away when I shot him. And, oh man, you want to talk about a rush after letting that arrow go.
Now, how about during it? Were you calm and collected as a stone cold killer or were you freaking out?
You know, I think I was perfectly calm. I mean, as calm as you want to be. It was just, you know, listen to a podcast on the way out there, you know, just feel like I was prepared, ready. And, you know, again, I stopped looking at those antlers. If I would have kept looking at those antlers, I would have fallen out of my tree stand.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But, about 25 yards away and perfectly broadside to me. And it was a double lung shot. And, you know, as soon as that hit him, I mean, I started to turn around in my stand and climb out of it. I was so pumped. I mean, it was just like an immediate shot of adrenaline and, you know, had to stop myself and climb back into the stand. And, you know, that's when the buck fever set in, you know, just, I knew it was something awesome, but just had no idea, you know, until I got up closer to it. Because, I mean, the headset on one side, I mean, he's got, I mean, 64 points, a lot
yeah.
more points.
Yeah, and you obviously from a distance, and even when you're shooting him, you're not looking closely at that. So it's not like you shot him and thought, man, this thing's going to be darn near a world record. I'm sure those thoughts never went through your mind.
Never once. But man, as soon as I, you know, I probably waited 5, maybe 10 minutes. It was 27 minutes between me taking the video of that 8-pointer and me being up on that deer. So anyway, I finally climbed down out of the stand and started, you know, glassing, looking at the area. And there were 2 bucks that were looking at me. And at that point, I just didn't care about them. I was very confident in that shot and saw a big chunk of fur, and then 5 yards away started seeing blood, and then, you know, a couple yards from there found my arrow. And as soon as I found that arrow, you know, it was just another confirmation that that was a good shot. And I just slowly followed the blood and glassed in front of me, and I mean, he didn't go but 50 to 60 yards.
Okay.
Soon as I
so describe, you know, the moment that you walk up on them and you realize, you know, it's Christmas time for the deer hunter.
Yeah, I mean, just in shock, and you know, I took a picture of the deer, and I mean, at this point, I'm basically out there by myself, and I took a picture of it, and I looked at the picture, and I was just like, nobody is going to believe this. And couple of my close friends had seen the picture I took after that, which was just kind of a selfie. But I mean, that picture just, it really shows the excitement that I had at that moment. You know, I was just beyond ecstatic. And, you know, from kind of that moment on, it was, you know, great to kind of, you know, celebrate, you know, the accomplishment. But then my mind just kind of started shifting. Okay, now I got to figure out how to get this deer out of here. Had soccer games for the kids the next morning. And, you know, you start thinking about what's ahead now and knowing that it's not an easy task. But I was actually, you know, I ran back to my truck and ended up calling my uncle, and he came down with a buddy and ended up getting it out of there and, you know, took it to some light and field dressed it. And, you know, they were pretty shocked as well. You know, I think he thought I was injured. I was so out of breath by the time I called him, and so excited too. But it was pretty cool to have him and his friend out there, and you know, they got to help me get it out of the woods, and you know, obviously help field dressing it. But from then, you know, I sent a couple of pictures to my buddies. Just, we don't get cell phone service out there where we hunt very good, but somehow I was able to make the call out. But anyway, called one of my buddies, and he was like, well, it's dark. Do you see anything? And, you know, I was like, you just wait. And ended up stopping at his house, and he helped me clean the deer. We deboned it and got it prepped for the meat.
At that point, did you really think you had something, or still really had no idea?
You know, I honestly thought I had a 200-inch deer. I mean, the first time I counted it, it was like, oh my God, it's got 40 points. And then it was like, oh my God, it's got 50 points. And, you know.
Stop right there a second. So just to describe it to people who haven't seen a picture of it, how many scoreable points does it have, the size of the bases, those kind of things?
It's pretty lopsided. It's a 64x3 is what Boone and Crockett scored it. There's a ton of points that, you know, were broken off or not an inch long on it. But it's just so unique in the sense that you look at pictures of it and you can see, I mean, there's antlers coming in every direction. And, you know, that's the other part, is they're coming from every direction. So you look at a picture of it, you just don't really grasp it. The other part that's weird about it is, you know, it's sitting on like a 115-inch frame. So it's not a big, wide, you know, monster. It's just one of the bases. You know, there's been multiple people measure it, but depending on where you go, it's, you know, 8 to 12 inch base on one side. I mean, that's almost unheard of.
Yeah, yeah. And how old is the buck?
You know, they thought it was 4.5 years old, so not anything crazy old. There was a lot of speculation, you know, what causes this, and, you know.
Yeah, that was my next question. Do they have any idea? I mean, you know, there's been interviews I've done where a buck had his testicles ripped off or injured or different things cause the freaky horns. But what do you know so far?
It's still just speculation, but I can tell you that he had, you know, both testicles seemed fine. There was no identifiable injury, but I'm guessing that, I mean, I don't know what else would have caused it. I've got the trail camera picture to confirm he did drop his antlers the year before, and it was all fresh growth. But there was no, you know, as we were deboning the deer and going through it, there was nothing visible. So I got to believe it was an injury that, you know, made him so lopsided, but, you know, I guess we'll never really know.
Now, if his one side was, let's say he was a normal deer, you know, and his one side was comparable to the other, what would he score? You know, just looking at the other side. I mean, was he a 120 buck, a 130 buck, a 140 buck?
Yeah, about 115 inch. I mean, not that big, okay. Not that wide. I mean, it was decent mass on there, but just, I mean, nothing that most people would pass on it. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he wasn't even a shooter, so to speak.
Right, right.
That's crazy. That is truly something. Now, you told me before we started the interview that you did have one picture, one picture of this buck in the spring.
Yeah, it was April 25th. It was actually two pictures, but, you know, I leave one camera up all year round, and, you know, that's where he came by, and I feel embarrassed at this point that the picture that I have is basically my cell phone taking a picture of a laptop screen, which every hunter knows that's a terrible thing to look at, but we all do it. I can't find the original picture yet.
And what did he look like then? You said you could tell that there was something funky going on.
You know, I would say most that, well, let's just compare one side of his to the other. It's like having a golf ball next to, you know, something between a softball and a soccer ball. I mean, it was
okay.
I mean, absolutely lopsided even to begin with.
Okay. So what's interesting is sometimes a buck will injure himself during velvet, you know, and that causes some freaky, weird thing to happen. In April, there's not much going on yet, really. And he already had the issue. So it's not like he got hung up in a fence in July. This happened pretty early on.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if it happened as he shed last year or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So walk us through when you realized, hey, I need to get this scored by somebody real because this thing is, you know, potentially enormous.
Oh, I mean, it was, I obviously knew that I needed to get it scored, but, you know, it was as soon as my boss had been out antelope hunting in western Kansas, and so he didn't get back until, like, Wednesday, and, you know, as soon as he set his eyes on it, I mean, he had seen the pictures and was impressed, but as soon as he put his eyes on it, he was just flabbergasted. I mean, just... You know, probably as excited as I was about the deer, it was kind of cool to have, you know, somebody you work with supporting it and as excited as you are. Anyway, he was like, I'll bring in my measuring kit. We'll measure it. And, you know, we first measured it the first time and it was 341 inches gross and 316 net. And then we realized that, you know, we had a spread credit, so it was like 315 net, and you know, we felt like we weren't trying to over measure it, and we measured a few things differently than you know, Boone and Crockett, and I've had SCI look at it, and it'll go into Buckmaster and Pope and Young as well. But then we waited a little bit and measured it again. And, you know, it just never really sunk in. I had SCI measurer come over and he measured, I think it was 365 inches on it. I mean, it just,
okay.
It, when you have that many points, it just starts adding up.
Sure.
And I mean, even getting that SCI score, it just didn't make sense. And, you know, I'd talked to a few people because pictures had leaked or I'd showed somebody, but I just didn't want to go public and say what I thought it was just because it never made sense. Deer just don't start with a three.
So at what point, I mean, how far along did you get before you realized, you know, the big guns need to be called in to measure this and we might be looking at something truly, you know, once in a lifetime, you know, world record class deer?
So my boss and I, we went up to the Parks and Wildlife Department. He knows the director up there and, you know, showed it to him and, you know, he had a few questions on it and, you know, we kind of set a date for December 12th to get it measured. And anyway, in the meantime, he had sent some pictures off to Boone and Crockett trying to get some clarification on measurements. And about 2 weeks out, into November, I followed up with him and just said, hey, what time are we going to measure this? And he said, oh, well, I'd sent some questions off, haven't heard back. So he followed up and then it kind of turned into, well, they're not sure if they're going to measure it. And so next thing I know, I'm driving up to Kansas City, a couple hours away, met with the chairman of the records committee for Boone and Crockett. He took some more pictures, didn't really say much as far as, you know, what they're going to do. But he was flying up to Montana for Boone and Crockett the next day, coincidentally. They voted on it. I guess it was a unanimous vote to go ahead and measure it. They had, I guess, past precedents set as far as similar type deers. And but one of the stipulations they put on measuring the deer was that, yeah, Mark, who was the director here locally, can measure it. But they also required Ken Witt from Dallas, Texas area to come up. Ken's been on... well, he was on the Brewster Buck panel score.
Okay.
He's been on all sorts of world-class panels.
So he's the big gun. They called in the big gun.
Yeah. And, you know, they kind of treated it like a panel score the first time in the sense that I wasn't able to be in the room when they measured it, which, you know, was a little bit frustrating. But, you know, I was just excited to finally get it measured. And by the time, you know, all this got worked out, it wasn't measured till 87 days after I harvested the deer.
So okay.
For me, that felt like, you know, an eternity in the sense that, you know, I had all this excitement, but I didn't want to speculate on it until I got a score. And then, you know, so it was a Friday that they scored it, January 3rd, I think. And then that following Tuesday, I wanted to wait and let the state of Kansas do the press release on it. Just didn't want to come out there and say, hey, look at me type of deal. But anyway, they put out their press release on Tuesday evening. And, you know, from there, it kind of caught fire. Coincidentally, before the score even, I had met the guys at Scent Crusher. And, you know, he was pretty amazed by the rack and, you know, wanted me to come in and do an interview. And then, you know, after I realized what it was, I apologized, kind of backed out on him. But he was like, well, why don't you come to the ATA show with us? And, you know, that's something where it's just, you know, that's something you hear about, but you don't even think is a possibility in the sense, you know, it's probably the coolest show in the archery industry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, all the manufacturers. And so, Tuesday, the news came out. Wednesday, I was on the road to Indianapolis with a buddy of mine. And, you
know, I was there. I never bumped into you, I guess.
Yeah. But absolutely one of the, you know, most fun shows you could ever go to. And the guys at Scent Crusher and everybody over there was just amazing and, you know, made it a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So why, just for clarification, why were they considering not scoring the buck? I mean, it sounds like they really had to think long and hard about getting a team together to do it.
They just trying to confirm where the main beam was on that one side. It's just, I mean, such a, I mean, wild sprout of antlers that, you know, again, pictures just don't do it justice. And I really feel like taking it up there and letting Richard look at the deer before, you know, he went up to the rest of the committee was maybe what convinced him.
Okay. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. It's been, you know, you go from zero to rock star overnight, huh?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't feel like I deserve it by any means, but it's, you know, on the other hand, I look at it and feel like this isn't going to happen again. You know, this is my one wave to catch and, you know, get to do things like go to the ATA show and, you know, I'm going to get to show off the deer, I guess, at the Kansas Monster Buck Classic this weekend. And I mean, as you know, the ATA show is really just industry insiders where this will be the first time, you know, the public gets to look at it. And, you know, I think it's going to be cool to show it off to, you know, fellow Kansans. And like I said, I'm no professional hunter. I just got lucky. And, you know, I took the attitude from day one after I, you know, got the deer that, you know, if somebody else had done it, just do what you would want them to do. And, you know, that, you know, take it around, share it, share my story, that sort of thing.
Do you have your autograph pen ready?
No. There's only been one joke about that. I feel like, you know, the news cycle in today's world is so quick that next year I'll be, you know, old news.
How about your selfie camera? That your selfie stick. There's going to be a lot of people want the old selfie picture taken with you, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the other cool part is going to be that my family is going to be able to, you know, see me at the Kansas show where, you know, it's kind of like you leave everybody behind and you try to describe to them what you're doing. And, you know, to a 7 and a 3-year-old, they just kind of, oh, okay. You know, they don't necessarily get it. And, you know, they get excited about the deer, but again, you know, 3 minutes later, they're just wanting to go back and play with their toys.
Yeah. For sure. It's funny you mentioned the news cycle part because that is true. I've interviewed a lot of hunters over the years for magazines, and some of them, I think that their 15 minutes of fame will go on forever. Yeah. And there's very few deer that do that anymore. Now, yours is right up there, obviously, like the Brewster Buck, who's number one, and he's going to be on the podcast here in a week or two. You know, you're going to ride this wave for a while, but you are correct in that next year someone's going to kill a freak and he'll be all the buzz. It might not be as big as yours, but, you know, life goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, kind of as trying to process, you know, things early on, you know, we looked at, you know, the Hansen Buck story and, you know, you hear about him. Number one, it was very amazing deer. A lot of people like those big typicals. But the big difference between, you know, his era and our era, I think, is the fact that social media, you know, you had to go see the Hansen Buck at a show where, you know, today people are pretty satisfied with a picture or videos. And, you know, we move on so much faster, too.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I was talking to Gordon Whittington from North American Whitetail about that, and he was telling me that the words he actually used were that before a buck's body is even cold and dead on the ground, it's on social media, and you know, long before it hits the cover of North American Whitetail, everybody in the world knows about it. Where you go back even 10 or 15 years ago, if you were on the cover of North American Whitetail, there was huge news, and that's where everybody saw it first, and it was a big, big deal. And today, by the time it reaches the cover of North American Whitetail, it's practically old news. It's still cool, but it's practically old news.
Yeah, Yeah, everything's just, you know, at a different pace.
Now, are you going to be on the cover of North American Whitetail?
That's yet to be determined. I've spoken with Gordon, and I don't know. There may be a little concern. My deer's not pretty enough, but my fingers are crossed.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, what's interesting to me too, and I just get the underlying sense from you a little bit, like when it's a freaky non-typical like that, it doesn't carry the same weight with some people.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm still a little bit nervous about, you know, that perception of it, but I tell you, going to the ATA show, you know, and speaking with everybody there, I would say there was just so
much. No one gave a rip.
No, everybody thought it was pretty awesome. There was one guy that just made me shake my head, but that's one out of thousands, you know, and so maybe I'm just self-conscious about that. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, people talk about replicas and, you know, will you do that? And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to take the original antlers around to shows anymore, but, you know, it's not that big 24-inch spread, you know, typical deer that a lot of people like.
Yeah, you'll eventually probably want to get replicas made, you know. One of my clients is Lucky Buck Mineral, and he gets replicas made of a lot of the big deer that, you know, the happy customers who kill a big buck and they were using Lucky Buck or whatever. He gets replicas made, and it certainly does make life a lot easier for you, because you don't have to, you can have your buck locked up, so to speak, and just walk around with a replica.
Yeah, a lot less concern where, you know, that's, you know, I guess a concern coming into this weekend with the consumer show. And, you know, will everybody be, you know, will there be that 10-year-old kid that, you know, gets bumped or pushes somebody else into the display? And, you know, are you worried about that type of a thing? But
got your bodyguards ready?
Yeah, hopefully I'll have a few friends helping me keep an eye out.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate you being on it. I enjoyed your perspective as well. It was great talking to you. And like I said before, further proof that a lot of these monster bucks, you know, the world records, they're killed by guys who just love hunting. You know, very few of them are killed by the famous. You know, they're just guys out hunting, and they get lucky, or they put the time in, or a little of both. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me on. It's a great honor.
Thank you. Well, appreciate it, and good luck at the show.
All right. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It was great having Brian on the show, and one thing we can all learn from this episode is anyone can kill a giant. You might be thinking, I hunt public land. You might be thinking, I only have a small tract of land. You might think it'll never happen to me, but this episode proves that anyone can kill a giant buck. It just has a lot to do with luck and being at the right place at the right time. So it truly was great having Brian on the show. Until the next episode, to learn more about me, visit my website, tracybreen.com. That's TracyBreen.com. I use the website typically to just book speaking engagements for wild game dinners. So if you have a wild game dinner coming up and you need a speaker, check out my website. We'll have another episode up here in a few days. Until then, God bless and have a great day.